means the people at Scratch are going to be on top of their game. If you're not familiar with Scratch, they deliver custom content in a voice honed for the age of social networks. S-K-R-A-T-C-H. Follow them on Twitter, Instagram, and all the likes. With it being PGA Championship Week, it's actually Phil Mickelson's 100th career start in a major, and our friends at Callaway Golf have put together some pretty incredible stats, quizzes, and photos. All kinds of awesome content at callawaygolf.com/Phil. Go there, check it out, and share your favorite Phil moment using the hashtag Phil100. Again, that's callawaygolf.com/Phil.
Be the right club.
Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most. How about him? That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up Podcast, episode 90. Going to do a little Bridgestone wrap, a lot of things going on in golf, PGA Championship preview, joined by none other than Tron Carter. Tron, how we feeling?
Good. You're just going to ignore the Reno next week?
Look, we got a lot to discuss. I'm not ignoring the Reno. I'm not ignoring the web. Like, we had the Women's British Open this week. Like, there's a lot going on, so.
I want to get steep on the Women's British Open. That was a good watch.
It needs to be noted that this is the first ever podcast literally recorded from my parents' basement. Like, the Wi-Fi is actually better upstairs, but I wanted to record it downstairs in the basement just to absolutely fit the stereotype. So here we go. This is it. Full time.
You gotta snap a pic, man.
I know.
A pic after this one.
I haven't like showered or anything this morning because, and I got a lot to do today. We're going to Charlotte tonight. Flying to Charlotte. We're gonna be on site for this weekend down at the PGA. Pretty fired up about that. We'll discuss that here in a little bit. But I wanted to debrief on Bridgestone a bit. I know it's your favorite event on the calendar, your favorite golf course on the calendar. But I did spend a couple days up there this week. I had the awesome experience of staying in the locker room. They have like about 15 rooms, like bedrooms in the locker room there at Firestone, and the tour was nice enough to set me up with the Arnold Palmer room, like room one, like directly outside of Phil's locker in the locker room. It was really uncomfortable, yet really fun and a pretty amazing experience. But so like literally my shower for the week was like the player's shower. So I would have to get up super early in the morning and shower so that I wasn't like walking around in a towel like as players were coming through.
you're in the shower and Bubba walks in and
there were some awkward walk bys in there, but I didn't get up early enough on Wednesday. I guess players just got to the course earlier on Wednesday, and I'm getting out of the shower at like 7 a.m. and Rory didn't show up at the course until Wednesday, and I'm walking past him and he's like, What are you doing? Like, he had no idea I was staying there. It's like, what are you doing in the locker room? One, and two, why are you showering in here?
Just make yourself right at home.
Yeah, seriously.
That's pretty savage that he doesn't show up till Wednesday.
I'm not sure what the reasoning was exactly. I mean, it's not, he hadn't been there in a couple of years either. So, but it's not exactly a course he needs a lot of reps on and whatnot. But
Firestone, man, it's caveman golf. You're just proving my point.
accurate. So yeah, let's talk about Firestone some. I know we've both been pretty critical of it, and actually had some players ask me about it, like, because kind of confused on where we are coming from on this, because we've been critical of it as a television viewer, and that's what I tried to explain to people. As a TV viewer, it just doesn't pop very much.
Yeah.
And you get an overhead shot of this course, and it is straight back, straight down, and it's just repetitive. When you're there and like in between the trees and stuff, you kind of get a much bigger appreciation for the elevation changes and the slopes. Like, there's no flat lies in the fairway there. And just the conditioning of the course is absolutely second to none. And I mean, you're right in your kind of, I don't want to say criticism of it, of the guys being on cruise control all week. It's like a course that they just love, though. I mean, the players rave about it. It's a championship level course. It's not to say it's without criticism, but man, I walked away pretty impressed with it in person.
Yeah, I had a similar thing when I went there. Actually, I preferred the other course, not the West, but the other one.
It's North.
The North. for that one. But I mean, obviously, I don't think it's right. feasible for a golf tournament on that. But where it is on the schedule, I can, you know, the week before a major, you don't want these guys having to, you know, get too steep on strategy and grinding and all that stuff. So I get that it's probably a pretty good fit for where it slots in on the schedule. But yeah, you know, there's certain instances where I feel like you get penalized less the farther offline you hit it.
Yep.
There, where you miss it by 5 yards, you're behind a tree or you're in some thick rough. You miss it by 15 yards, you're in the middle of another fairway.
I mean, that goes for a lot of like tree line courses in general. If you're 5 yards off the fairway, you might be toast. But if you go even further off the fairway, then you may have a line and a shot in. So,
I feel like this one's a little bit overgrown though too. Like the trees need to be trimmed back, and then they could grow the rough up a little bit more in certain spots too. I don't know. That's just my kind of, you know, amateur architecture opinion.
Yep. I mean, you have seen it though in person as well though. So you're not just armchair in this.
Yeah.
I know.
And it would be a great course to play all the time. I think it, you know, it's kind of like Olympia Fields in that regard. Like I think it's definitely much, much more playable than it looks on TV, you know? A lot of my frustration just stems from the fact that there's a World Golf Championship in Akron, Ohio every year.
Yep.
Like, that just seems kind of, nothing against Northeast Ohio, but that just seems kind of a waste, especially when it's a Japanese company now that's sponsoring it. Japanese guy just won it. You know, there should be a WGC in Japan, or there should be one in Australia every year.
We say that, though. I mean, like, in theory, it sounds great, yet whenever they, like, the HSBC in China, like, I know it's China, that's not the two places you just mentioned, but I don't tune into that typically. That's not like appointment viewing. And the Australia one is always such a tough with time zones, the time changes. It's like happens in the middle of the night, basically, in the U.S. It doesn't get the same viewing. I mean, I'd imagine, like, the President's Cup didn't get the best viewing when it was at Royal Melbourne, as sweet as that place is. So it all makes sense from a business standpoint to do it at a place the players love, a place with steeped in tradition.
Yeah.
And it's not going anywhere anytime soon because the players, I mean, they love it. I mean, it's the same, I don't know. Like they didn't go over great with a lot of players moving the other WGC from Doral, you know, and this one just is not going anywhere anytime soon. It's fun. I mean, it's kind of weird. I didn't realize WGCs, they don't allow fans in until Wednesday. Like there were no fans out there on Tuesday. Like the guys can just cruise around. They don't have to worry about autographs, and it's just a jolly atmosphere there. And I know it's kind of a, I don't want to
they
say
just got to worry about bloggers in there.
In the locker room. Not inaccurate. But yeah, just kind of a laid back vibe. And there's not a whole lot to do around Akron in general, I think. So the guys really get some really good work in and don't have a lot of off course distractions going on there. So I was impressed. And we did sneak out and play the North course and the West course. Not, we didn't get 18 in either times. We teed off around 6:30 or whatnot. But North course is phenomenal. It's some incredible holes on it. You're right that it's not a championship level course.
Yeah.
I mean, they do hold events there. When I say it's not championship level, it's just not, they can't hold the PGA Tour event there. But man,
I think they've had it there a couple times, haven't they? Like when they were redoing,
not for a few years. But
yeah. I think the current version of a PGA Tour event, I don't think they could do there. But, there's some really dramatic par fives, and the ball was just flying out there. I mean, I don't know what it is about the air there, but, I mean, I think Rory set a record. He hit, like, 52 drives over 300 yards this week. Like, we were out on the West course, and I was hitting, like, three woods. They were going 300 yards. I don't know. It's not at altitude, but the ball just rolls out forever there in the air, that summer Ohio air.
Yeah.
The ball was just, there's a launching pad over there. But
how about DJ? Like, 445 or something like that?
Yeah, and apparently he didn't lay up. Like, it looked like if you just are following on StatTracker, I don't think it was on TV, but if you're following on StatTracker, it looked like he laid up after going 439 off the tee on 16. But Apparently his second shot hit a branch, and that's how it went out into the fairway, supposedly, according to Will Gray from Golf Channel. So
allegedly.
But did you get to tune into much of the event? I mean, it ended up being kind of the snooze fest that you were kind of predicting, I guess. I mean, Hideki shot 61 to win it by five.
It's caught a little bit yesterday, just before we went out and played yesterday, but caught a little bit in the bar beforehand, and then caught a little bit on Friday. But really, overall, I watched more of the Women's British Open than anything this week.
Well, we can touch on that as well, but we have to give a shout out to Charlie Hoffman
for real.
Conversation on 16. Brett Waldman, Waldo, his caddy, is my dude. I love Waldo. But I'm gonna collect any no laying up gear that I've given him over the years. The next time at the PGA this week, I'm gonna hunt him down and make sure that he gives it back, because he tried to talk Hoff out of going for it in two on 16. I can kind of see his point.
I mean, granted, he was what, like 285.
Yeah, there's no holding that green. Like, it's not worth it. It's overall not worth it to go for it. And I don't know. You can't like hold it and make an eagle with it. Like, it was best case scenario that Hoffman hit it barely over the green. But I did. I mean, part of me thinks Hoffman knew those cameras and audio were picking up that conversation, because he's pretty loud. He's like, "I'm trying to win the tournament. I'm tired of finishing in second." Like, I think it was it was kind of like Spieth at Augusta. Like, he definitely knew the cameras were watching when he was like, "What would Arnie do here, Mike?" There was an element of that, but I mean, got to respect the guy that was just did not care what place he finished in and wanted to go for it. So.
I mean, you got that guaranteed paycheck at those WGCs. That's my other thing, man.
Yeah.
Fired up the other night, you know, got some pushback from guys who were like, yeah, but, you know, you're just – if you're in that field, you're playing against the best in the world and you've earned it and all that. I get that. But you've already gotten the extra FedEx Cup points and the OWGR points for, you know, for doing well to get in there. It seems like kind of a rich get richer scenario, and I realize there's a business element to it where the tour has to. I mean, it's incumbent upon the tour to have marketable stars, and you know, having the WGCs at kind of bomber's paradise is good for the, you know, good for pumping up guys like Rory and Matsuyama and DJ and all those guys. But like, it just seems like there's, you know, the fact that the guy that finishes in second to last place at the WGC gets more world ranking points than somebody who, and I won't use Reno as an example because that's an opposite field event, but as somebody who finishes, say, T30 or T35 at like the John Deere or Hartford, it just doesn't seem right to me.
Yeah.
You know, like, where you haven't beat anybody, you're 35 shots off the lead, and I know it's a minuscule amount of points, but I mean, on this level, it's like everything matters at this point, you know?
Especially because there's that top 50 line that gets into this event, and how it's so important around that. Those little points matter so much at that level. I think Charles Howe was, I mean, he wasn't the closest, but he was very close to making it in on top 50 ranking and didn't. And then like, he falls further behind everyone in the top 50 because they all get the points no matter what this week. So I'm with you on that. The official world golf ranking points should be based on you beating your peers, not just the fact that you show up in a no-cut event and collect your paycheck. So I'm with you there. I don't know, but it is something different too, like a smaller field. And this tournament's like really great for spectator viewing too. I mean, there's not a ton of fans that that pack this course, and you can see a lot of stuff, and there's not that many guys out there.
So when you can get from hole to hole too, right?
Oh, yeah.
You can scoot all over the course pretty quickly, which is cool.
So there's like only 80 guys or whatever in the field, so you can kind of, if you want to see everyone, you basically can. I don't know. It's a unique, different event. It's not perfect, but man, it was fun to go to and to experience in person for the first time and kind of pick up the vibes and whatnot. So,
Matsuyama, he just came out digging yesterday, huh?
Didn't trust his swing yesterday and shot 61. I mean, at some point, I think we're already there. This is going to get old. The one-handed club finishes to 5 feet has been well documented, and it's fatiguing at this point. Now that to shoot 61 and then say I wasn't sure how that I could trust my swing today was just like, That's he's peak sauce right now. And part of me thinks that we, as much as we, I don't know, we don't talk about Hideki that much just because there's not that much to talk about other than he's really, really good at golf. But do we kind of underappreciate the fact that he's the third-ranked player in the world?
Yeah. I mean, is he, like, I feel like it's just, these guys are separating themselves. There's 6, 7, 8 guys out there that are.
Is there a big eight?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, there's like a big, yeah, like there's like a big half dozen, I think. And, you know, and then after that, it's just, you know, and then there's like a big 30 after that, I think. But yeah, I mean, there's, it, I think it just comes down to who has that top gear, you know, where Spieth, Rory, DJ, Matsuyama's proving that he has that. I mean, it's like, Ricky, you need to see that, man.
Quickly becoming the forgotten man?
I thought we were poor at the end of yesterday. I thought we were getting past. I thought he grew out of the whole orange-on-orange-on-orange thing.
That was a disappointing thing to see. I thought we were past that as well.
Yeah, and we grew out of that. You know, we've matured past that stage. So
it's almost like he had a quota he had to meet of the amount of orange. So he's like, all right, I'm just going to load this all into Sunday. it's not good. Not a good look. It's time to. He has made a lot more subtle the Sunday orange, which I can appreciate. But
a quick break for some exciting news from the world of Odyssey Golf. Odyssey is the number one putter in golf by a long shot, and in fact, has won the last two major championships. 2 weeks ago at the Senior Open, and just yesterday at the Ricoh Women's British Open. And new from Odyssey is the new O-Works Red and O-Works Black putters. The new shapes and finishes match with the popular Micro Hinge face insert. We'll have you making more putts in no time. I've got the red in the bag as it is. I absolutely love it. Visit odysseygolf.com for more on O-Works Red and Black, available online or in stores today. Odyssey, the number one putter in golf. Again, that's odysseygolf.com.
Can we talk about the McRib a little bit?
Of course. What do you got?
So I'm still just, I don't understand. Like, I don't know. I just feel like you should go back to the Scotty Cameron. But aside from the putting, it just seems like, and you were talking about this earlier in the week, it seems like he's a lot more engaged in his round. He's thinking his way around the course a little bit more. He's in his yardage book more. I mean, is that kind of the sense you got from him?
Yeah. So I talked to him a bit in the locker room, and I didn't go to his presser. So he may have touched on some of this in his presser, and this may be public knowledge and whatnot. But I didn't read all of the transcripts or whatnot. But the way he describes everything, it all makes sense, and it shows the level at which he thinks things through. And again, I know this is coming from Rory fanboy and whatnot, but he just kind of was saying, like, I was looking like on the course and looking at JP and like getting somewhat annoyed just in general, like they did, and it's just such an exact business, and there has to be like this. He said the relationship with the caddy is the most important, like the vibe in general, like the comfortable feeling you have. And, you know, rather than taking responsibility on some things, like on a shot that it ended up being the wrong distance, he was blaming his caddy. And he's like, I was getting, I don't know if he used the word lazy, but he's saying, now that I have Harry on the bag, Harry's an excellent player in himself. I think he's like a plus one or plus two. So he knows the game, but now Harry's a very experienced caddy. Now that I have him out there, first of all, I'm just looking forward to having my best mate out there on the bag. And second, he's like, now I'm engaged again. I'm out there. I haven't used a yardage book in years. I'm out there charting my yardages. I'm making notes in practice rounds, and you know, I'm stepping stuff up. I mean, he's helping obviously with that stuff, but I'm taking responsibility for it that way. When a club isn't the right club, I have absolutely nobody to blame but myself. I just found that perspective kind of interesting on it. I think he was just kind of on cruise control too much with JP, he and JP still have a great relationship, and I know it's, people were kind of giving him some slack on saying this isn't a firing, but it just, I think the way we view player caddy relationships, like in the media and just fans in general, isn't exactly the way the pros and the caddies view it. And that there's usually, in my experience and talking to people about it, it's not usually hard feelings. Like they people know that relationships are not forever, and like everyone wants to say
professional relationships.
Yeah, it's like what happened with Bones and Phil. It's like nothing happened. Like 25 years of working together is the exception. And, you know, maybe they just got kind of annoyed with each other. And, I mean, they are still great friends. And I talked with Phil some, and he just brought up Bones in a normal part of conversation as if everything is fine. And every person I've talked to seems to think it's just a true mutual decision and all that stuff. So, like, Rory and JP are still going to be friends. I know JP – I don't know a lot of details on it, but I know he's, like, just a pretty strong, solid businessman with kind of a networking guy and has a lot of business relationships that I think he's going to kind of go into – kind of that phase of his career, and they're still going to be friends. So I think anything's in play for Rory going forward. I think he's kind of doing this trial period. He's going to see how it goes with Harry on the bag. But I don't know. It's kind of interesting to just, you know,
it seems like it's more like it lets him, because that's kind of been my thing, is like he's either on or he's off. There's no grind mode.
Right.
And I feel like grinding, you know, and granted, I know nothing about anything on that playing that level. So this is, you know, so take this with a grain of salt, but I feel like when you're grinding, you know, like that, it just puts you a little bit more in that mentality when you're charting your own yardages, and you know you're just more engaged in the round. So
I know everyone's picking him for Coyle, but he did say like the Firestone PGA stretch is like the stretch he looks forward to the most every year, regardless of what the PGA course is. He's like, this is my favorite stretch of the year. So
good vibes going into the PGA for him. Real quick, did you see, or we need to get your reaction to, so Adam Sarson did a golf Twitter documentation, or compared golf tweeters to PGA Tour players. What did you think of your classification?
I was kind of conflicted. You know,
what did you get? So what did he get?
I got Bubba. which, you know what? I mean,
you're misunderstood.
I'm not going to fight it. I'm very mercurial, and, you know, I've got several different, you know, kind of personas. So, I can go with that, but I'm not a dick in real life. so that might be a little bit off.
I think like every one of your like Twitter takes is better just in like 400 words in a draft piece on the website, but you will never do it. You will always take it to Twitter.
I know. And Horath was telling me that the other night. He was like, dude, like this whole OWGR thing, just put it up on the website instead of like six tweets. I'm like, yeah, you're right, man. I'm just,
it won't ever change, though.
Like that. I want to get it right out there.
I can confirm you're not a dick in real life. I get so many people come up to me and be like, so what are you going to do about this Tron thing, right? And like people, that when the speed thing, when your alignment aid trolling thing was going on, first of all, like it wasn't
trolling, dude. That's
see,
how I really...
this is exactly what I did. Like, nobody knows you better than I do. And I'm like, I don't know. I think he is serious. Like everyone's like, oh, this is satire. And I was like, I'm not positive that it is satire. He might actually think this. So, yeah, you're out of control. But anything else we missed from Firestone, Bridgestone? I kind of want to move on to Steph and address this.
I think we're good there. I mean, you know, really just, it was Matsuyama, Hoffman. I mean, Hoffman just keeps plugging away, you know.
So we do got to get through. We got to get through Steph, the web. We got to talk women's British, and then Quail Hollow, and then a couple other Twitter questions. Yeah. So, Steph Curry, I thought he was going to shoot in the 80s. He shot 274s. I don't want to lead with taking things away from it immediately. Stonebrae is an easier setup, of course, on the web tour, but I walked away pretty damn impressed with everything involved with it. His showing, the crowds that were out watching it, impressed with everything except for it not being on TV. What was your main takeaway?
So I got a buddy from high school who played at Vanderbilt. He was first team All-America our senior year of high school. And he Monday qualified into two web tour events. He shot like 71, 69 in one of them, and missed the cut. And then he shot like 155 in another one on easier course than Stonebrae and missed the cut, but like played pretty well. And this is a guy who's got a competitive history of playing many big events. Like, he was the first ultra for the U.S. Open 1 year. I mean, he's played the Western Am probably 3 or 4 times. Like, he's played in big events. This guy, I mean, for like, it takes so many reps to get comfortable mm-hmm. in a pro tournament, and for him to just go out there and shoot 74-74 is unreal to me. I mean, I was blown away by it. Grant, you know, yes, the course is pretty wide open off the tee. You know, it was a good setup for him, but yeah, I mean, the guy just, you know, he grinded too. He made putts. He, you know, I was just blown away at some of the people that still are like, oh, you know, sure, he didn't embarrass himself, but he still took somebody else's spot. I'm like, dude, like Frank Licklider's in the tournament. Frank Licklider might come kill me in my sleep tonight if you're saying this, because that guy is a straight killer. He knows where the bodies are buried. But there's guys like that in these events every week that are taking up spots. You know, and like, yeah. People were talking about the web tour. Right. Bottom line, mission accomplished.
Yeah, and people got to understand the business side of it, and that the interest that and a lot the really solid web tour players understand that this was great for the web tour to get interest in it, people talking about it. Yeah. And again, the amount of people that were out following Steph and like the kids in basketball jerseys out running around. And I mean, I'm not a big grow the game guy. I mean, but you talk about like bringing like a star NBA player and playing in a golf tournament, how much that was like a lead topic of conversation in sports this week. And I think that if you want to really grow the game, that's the way to do it. I mean, something like that. And a guy that can come up there and hold his own, man. I mean, it's one thing to be like a scratch player. It's another to be a scratch player when you play essentially 3 months out of the year. How much does he play during basketball season and to come out?
That's the other thing. Like his body's got to be so banged up still. I mean, he played, 110 basketball games with preseason, NBA finals, all that in like 5.5-6 months.
And then come out, yeah. And you don't, I mean, I know, like, it's one thing to go out and shoot 74 too in like a weekend four ball where, you know, if you're playing with a partner and you're kind of out of a hole, you pick it up and take double. And like, you got to play this out. You can make a 9 pretty easily, even if you're like a good player. Like, if you pop one OB, like, you play at stroke and distance. There's a difference in.
Well, I'm playing in front of people too.
Exactly.
You're not used to it.
There's a lot. I don't know. I was legitimately impressed, and the people that are unimpressed by that, I don't understand your take. And that, I'm a scratch. I could shoot that out there. I'm like, shut up. Like, you probably could.
A lot of people pointed out, like, oh, he beat guys who have played on the web or who have won on the web before. He was only 1 or 2 shots behind guys who have won in the last few weeks. Like, I get that too. Like that. But then also, you look at it and you finish, you know, 20 shots behind some other guys. I think it just goes to show you too, like how deep the game is these days too. Like, yeah. Just how good the guys are out on the web too. Yep. Like, I don't want that to get lost in it too. Cause for him to play that well and still be that far off, you know, it just goes to show you, man, like these guys are really good. And the gap between the web and the big tour is getting smaller and smaller.
Yeah, old takes exposed, like the Twitter account that, you know, if you have a bad old take, like, we'll retweet it later. Retweeted mine when I said that that Steph going to this event is going to show how big the difference is between a scratch player and a pro. I don't think that was disproved. Like, I thought he was going to shoot 80. That was disproved. But, I mean, it's still like, this was best case scenario playing, I think, for Steph. And, yeah, look how far. Like the top, you know, how far off he was from making. He wasn't close to making the cut, which is fine. That was never the goal. Like, it was never a realistic possibility that he was going to make the cut. But again, best case scenario that he played, and that's how far back a scratch is from being competitive on a web tour, which is, I don't want to, using lesser tour is not the right thing to say because it's so unbelievably competitive out there. I don't think that's disproven at all. There's a huge difference between scratch and those guys. So.
It was like Lee McCoy just, you know, he was pissed about the whole, you know, him taking a spot. I'm like, well, Steph beat Colt McNeely by how many shots?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he's somebody that nobody had a problem with him getting the spot.
Yeah.
You know, so. And nothing against Colt McNeil. He's a young kid. You know, I don't mean to hate on him, but I'm just saying, like, he didn't – he accomplished so much more good than anything negative about taking one spot away from somebody.
Right.
You know, if anything, he created another however many spots just due to the sponsor being happy.
Yeah, this is like the longest stretch of web discussion we've had on this podcast. I'm pretty sure. Like, come on, this means something. Like, this was. Well, the sponsor stuck their neck out there too. Like, if he shoots 85-85, they look pretty bad. It would kind of get brushed away eventually. But man, is some people, you know, that went for this idea, they deserve some recognition for it. I think it's great. So
the one thing they whiffed on was not having it on TV.
That was kind of ridiculous. Yeah. It was, you needed something.
You can do some sort of live stream. Or, yeah. You know, do like some sort of like special PGA Tour live thing, but whatever.
So. All right. I got maximum 30 minutes left. Let's go to the women's British.
I watched some of it on TV with no sound. It was the only time I had a chance to, but just mostly because I wanted to watch Kings Barnes. But what were you? I think you were grinding on some coverage this week.
Yeah. I fired it up on Saturday. Well, I fired it up on Friday morning a little bit, but Saturday morning I watched like 3 or 4 hours of it. IK Kim, she's like, what, 5'2",
yeah.
5'3"? I mean, I was blown away. First of all, Kings Barnes is sweet. I know what you're talking about. That was really my first exposure to it. And then, secondly, like, she was flagging her irons. I didn't realize the whole backstory. I forgot about her missing, you know, 14-inch putt at the Nabisco 1 year, or the ANA, or whatever they call it now. But just like her interviews and everything before and after the rounds, the way that she played with a big lead, I was blown away. I'm a huge new fan of hers. She was super engaging in all the interviews, and just her attitude about coming back from probably the most heartbreaking way you could possibly lose a major, and just maintaining a positive attitude about it was fantastic. So. Only thing I could hate on is just her pace of play.
It's not good out there.
They put them on the clock on Saturday. They're the final group, man. Crazy.
Yeah, if I had forgotten about it too, but I went back and watched on YouTube the he's got like 2011 Kraft Nabisco. Watch the final putt. It is literally 14 inches. It's like a formality. Terry Gannon's like ready to give her the trophy, and she lips it out. And she loses in a playoff. It's like the most brutal way you could lose a major, save Jean Vandeville. To come back from that to win. Michelle Wee had a great week. Kings Barnes looked like they got some incredible weather, and they got some of the brutal stuff as well.
Yeah.
They play that course decently far back, and it's not the toughest golf course, especially for them, and the scores were pretty low. It was pretty interesting. I don't know, it's not that interesting, but they did just alter the routing because they couldn't fit hospitality that was necessary around the real 18th hole. So they made the first hole the 18th hole and made the second hole the first, which was a par three. It was kind of a weird way of doing it, but I think that was kind of their only option. But I don't know. When I play that course, I don't necessarily see it as like a standout championship level golf course. As great as it is, it's like set up for American tourists to come over and play it. And it's like 225 pounds, and they just print money over there. And it's amazing. It's like an absolute must play in the area. But it was interesting to see them host a tournament, and I feel like the course held its own and showed out very well.
Yeah, big greens too. Like, it was fun. As soon as they put that final group on the clock, the one English girl who's like 21, she was very impressive until they put them on the clock on Saturday, and then she promptly four putted the 17th hole.
Jeez.
But yeah, it was. I really liked the first hole par three thing.
Yeah,
I think that's so cool. That's such. And then, I mean, IK Kim, she just like straight up flagged it on the first hole, and I was like, all right, she's got this. You know, playing, you know, teeing off with a 6-shot lead and not even batting an eye. So, yeah, it was cool. I'm really curious. I'm like super pumped up for the Dunhill.
Yeah.
Because they play the Dunhill, what, there, Carnoustie and St. Andrews?
Yeah, and they the pros do play, and they have a pro set of tees there, which are way back there. But the pros still eat King's Barnes up when they play it. It's wide. It's like I said. It's kind of a friendly. It's a blend of American golf and Scottish golf. And I mean, it's a phenomenal place. But it's a newer course. If people
like
don't
a modern,
know,
really
yeah,
sport.
It's like 50, it's only 15, 16 years old or something like that. So. But just an incredible property and just an unbelievable addition to what was already a stacked area of golf. But I think I've done enough golf, Scottish golf travel advertising this summer. So moving
Props
on.
Props to Kyle Phillips, too. For I mean, he came out of the Robert Trent Jones stable and just kind of made a name for himself and gotten out of that shadow a little bit. I think that's cool because, So, anyway,
you've made your feelings abundantly clear on that.
Jones family legacy.
Let's touch on the PGA. It's coming up this week, obviously.
You're gonna skip Reno again.
Damn it, I did. What do you? I watched none of it. I got none of it. So you're gonna have to fill me in there.
Man, I was pumping it so hard, and then
you didn't watch it.
I watched quite a bit of it on Saturday, and it was the quad. Like there were guys missing greens with wedges. There was like 10 shots in a row where guys were missing greens with wedges. Greg Owen was taking 3 minutes to hit each shot. I mean, it was brutal. Like I could tell Whit Watson and the guys in the booth were like, oh my God. And then there were some guys playing well, like, you know, but it was just, I think those guys get almost over aggressive.
Yeah. Cause with that setup. Yeah, exactly.
But I'd like to see. I just think it's an awkward spot for Stableford on the schedule. Where I was talking to DJ about this the other day. Like, I think they should do it Stableford earlier in the season. And at this point, you know, this is really these guys' second to last opportunity to get FedEx Cup points
right
before Wyndham. And so it seems like kind of a weird spot to do it and have them, you know, jockeying for position in a format that they only get to play once a year, you know?
It's a fair point.
But yeah, I mean, I love kind of the game within the game where, you know, watching these guys, you know, kind of jockey for position, try to, you know, I mean, there was a ton of guys that were kind of that 120 to 140 range that were, you know, they're trying to fight for just 2-3 spots, you know, in the FedEx Cup standings, get into that 125. So anyway, just, yeah, it was, I think Chris Stroud ended up winning. I didn't see the finish yesterday. I guess it went to a playoff, but yeah, that course looks sweet. Montreux looks awesome. They just, it's a little frustrating. They just water the hell out of it, I guess, cause just trying to see scoring out there. But
you good? Did you get your Reno
good.
Fill?
I'm
okay.
Good. I got my fill.
All right, now the major championship that's taking place this week. First of all, do you want to, A, kind of fill me in, because I've been all over the place, and B, fill the listeners in on what we're going to be up to this week?
Yes, we're going – you're flying down later today, and then rest of the crew is – we're coming up. We're partnering with Turner to do some social stuff from tournament on Saturday, Sunday, so – we're driving up from Jacksonville to Atlanta. We're all meeting in Atlanta. Going to go play Greenville Country Club, the Chanticleer course on Friday. Play some Wolfhammers out there. Probably do a little video stuff with the crew up there. And then we're going to be up in Charlotte for Saturday and Sunday. So really looking forward to it. First time we've all been together since Players. And that was so busy. I feel like this is going to be a great, great opportunity for all of us to just, you know, really dig in. So
things are going to stop being polite and they're going to get real here. How much do you know about the changes that have been made to Quail Hollow?
That's my thing. I don't know a ton. I'm hearing kind of mixed reviews. The Foz did it. I heard the rough is super long right now too. Like really long, like 5-inch Bermuda rough. So that'll be interesting to see. You know, certain, like I was talking to certain guys that are like, yeah, man, like everybody thinks this is going to be a bomber's paradise. And it's really not if this rough is going to be as high as it is. So
I don't know. I'm really curious to see it. Weather forecast looks a little bit cooler than I would have expected too, which is good. You know, I was expecting like mid 90s and just jungle like humidity,
swamp ass, just
yeah. And it's gonna throughout be like low, the field. Low 80s. So
I mean, it. So I got so they changed after the 2016. For people who don't know, after the 2016 Wells Fargo. They like as play was like still going on the back nine, they started tearing up the front nine. Like that's how fast they wanted to get it done. And they they switched all the greens from rye to Bermuda and tried to give them as much time as they could to grow in. And then I got all the rest of it. I did a little preparation for this. This is what like when you could do this full time, you might actually think some things out, but I got this from the Charlotte Observer from Rick Bonnell. He said number one is now a 540-yard par four. Two was totally eliminated and now a brand new par three. They needed to, I guess that they rerouted the first hole through what was also the second hole. Number five was a par five. Now it's a par four, and then a bunch of bunkers were added to 11. And they put new layers of sod in the bunker, and the new sand in the bunker is like the same kind of sand that they use at Augusta. It is like everyone says again, and he is still my pick. I picked him before the year, everyone's going to pick him. But it's still a great setup for Rory, but it's not the same course that he's kind of dominated on in the past. At least there's enough new things about it that it's going to be. It's going to be, I think, hopefully, I just want it to feel different than the Wells Fargo does.
Yeah.
But the problem is, like, CBS treats
You're saying
it,
you don't want Derek Ernst to win.
I'm good if he does not. I'm not saying I don't want him to win, but shame he got excluded from the field this year, really. It's robbery. But the problem is, like, CBS treats this tournament like it's a normal tournament. Like, at no point at Baltusrol last year did that tournament feel like a major. Other than that, we know the PGA Championship is a major, but
glory's last shot, man.
Glory's last shot. They got rid of that. That's no longer a thing. I think it's this is major is the phrase now, which couldn't be worse. It's like we are very well aware that it's a major championship.
The finishing stretch is so good.
It is. It just. I hope they. Did they get rid of calling it the Green Mile yet? Like, can we not do that, or is that already too? Are we too far gone on that?
I think that's still a thing. I'm sure.
All right.
I just my enduring memory of Quail Hollow is I think the first year they had to turn the Wells Fargo there when it was the Wachovia. They David Thomas had what like an 8-shot lead or a 6-shot lead going into 18. And he made a quad and still by two.
I respect that so much.
That was awesome. It was like the coolest thing ever.
I forgot about that. It is like a tournament that, and I may be misremembering this, but I feel like it's a tournament that kind of turned around how things were handled at week to week on the PGA Tour, and that the players. This was like one of the first events to really change the way they treated the players and how and the care that went into a golf tournament. And they got so much praise from the guys, Phil especially, if I remember right, being like, this is a way a tournament should be run. Mm-hmm. And again, there's so much logistically that happens with a golf tournament that a lot of people don't think about. And just the comfort level for the players and the caddies too, and things like that. Logistically, the food, the cars, and just the service and everything that goes into a tournament, you know, with the amount of things these guys have to do week to week, from media and sponsor obligations and, you know, physios and all that stuff, like that means something. So the even the year the greens went to shit, I think 2013, when it became the Derek Ernst Invitational, like Phil was like, he's like, we have to give them a pass for this because of how good this golf tournament has been, how great this golf course is. So
to basically create a tournament from scratch. 2003 they did it, and then 2 years they went without a title sponsor,
right?
2009, 2010, and just the list of former winners at this tournament. Anthony Kim won it in 08, Big Cat in 07, Furyk, VJ, Joey Sindelar. McRib, Lucas Glover's won. There's some There's some serious ball strikers.
Yeah. Sean O'Hare won here too, didn't he, I think? Yeah.
He did, yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong here. I feel like people in recent years have started to make a much bigger deal out of the career Grand Slam than I think it actually is. Do people overreact to the career Grand Slam thing?
You're talking Puerto Rico, Mayakoba.
Oh, my God.
John Deere.
I teed that up for you. I think it's a big deal. Okay. I don't know. I just feel every time we go into, like, now what's going to be the U.S. Open, Masters, and PGA with Phil, Rory, and Spieth, that we're going to, like, do this hype thing. And I feel like, I know that you can't control the outcome and whatnot, but I feel like building up the hype for somebody to win and complete the Grand Slam, like, inhibits them from being able to do it in some capacity. And I feel, I don't know, I think that, like, the media loves to drag these things out year to year and make such a big deal about somebody potentially closing the slam and whatnot. But I do think they missed an opportunity to pair Rory and Spieth together. And I know they always pair the first three major winners all together. But, I mean, I don't know. I think that could have been pretty cool to watch those two. Because I think both guys are going to be involved this week. So
how do you feel about Rahm this week?
How did he do at Bridgestone?
I think he was just kind of hanging out, biding his time. Just let's see here.
I mean,
it was like Rahm and DJ. I felt like we're just kind of, not trying to spend too much energy last week. They were just in the peloton.
I haven't spent too much time grinding on handicapping this thing yet, but I mean, I don't see a reason not to like Rahm. I mean, well, I didn't really know that the rough was up as high as you said it was either, and I think that changes things to a guy that's going to drive it really well in the fairway. And I think it's a bit of a misnomer that, when the rough is up, that it becomes less of a driving contest. I think it becomes even more of one. Like, DJ won at Oakmont by putting it in the fairway 300 yards plus down every fairway. And it's the bombers that are spraying it that are going to get probably ejected. But if you're driving it long in the fairway, you're in great shape.
That's the one thing, man. If DJ can start bucking his head again, and then you got Spieth, DJ, and Rory playing well at the same time, like, that might be the end all be all.
Aren't we due for like a major, a bust major winner though?
Oh yeah. I mean, I guess Danny Willett last year. But
that was at least still like super exciting how it all happened. I mean, it was heartbreaking, but I don't know. I've been saying that for a while now, and we still keep getting some pretty amazing winners. But
so Rahm last week, 67, 77, 67, 68. So three really good rounds. I like Kisner this week too, man. I think Kisner's due. South Carolina guy. And then another guy like Bill Haas.
Don't be proximity to where they're from in relation to the tournament guy.
Bill Haas has played this course a million and a half times.
Tommy Fleetwood's from Southport. I think he's...
All right. When is Patrick Reed going to step up?
He needs a top 10 just so you stop harassing me over this.
Yes.
I check it every round I do. I have him saved in my favorites, and I'm like, just give me one top 10 so we can eliminate this narrative. I don't know if it's super long and if it plays soft, I think that helps a guy like Reed a lot. But if it's firm at all, I don't know how well these greens are going to hold the thunderstorms. And I don't know, it's going to thunderstorm a lot this week, but I don't know how much rain that actually means. So
yeah, just quick bursts. Well, I think too, I would imagine the greens are going to be super firm just with having new Bermuda in there, new champion Bermuda.
That's the goal, I think. So I know they want to make it fast and firm, and that was so. I don't know.
We might be seeing 500-yard drives.
Very well, could
if it doesn't rain much at the beginning of the week.
Yeah. Anything else from Quail? Because we've only got about 10 minutes here, and we got some news items and some questions to get to.
No, we'll have plenty of time to cover that later in the week. So
Have you seen the Golfers Journal yet?
I have. DJ showed me an advanced copy yesterday, and I'm pumped.
Yeah.
So we got We got Randy and Andy on the last two pages there.
Well, for people that aren't familiar with it, you want to give us a bit of a description of what it is. I have trouble describing it, but the way I called it was kind of like a golf passion magazine is the way I saw it.
Yeah, it's like a quarterly, basically it's like a quarterly coffee table book almost.
Mm-hmm.
Golf course architecture, travel stuff, just really, you know, limited advertising. It's like low-key thick. with not much advertising in it. So, but yeah, just awesome photography, well produced. I'm excited for it. I think it's exactly what kind of golf's been missing.
Yeah.
So
we're going to be involved in it. We're going to be producing, I guess, kind of a quarterly column in the back of it. So I think you're up for the next episode, right?
Yeah. I just turned it in. Just filed.
You've got an editor. You finally have somebody to answer to.
Yeah.
Other news items was, of course, we were announced on Twitter last week that DJ Pyhowski, formerly of the PGA Tour and of Scratch, is kind of going into he's going into business for himself, but we are bringing him into the fold as one of his first clients for No Laying Up, and he's going to be helping us with a lot on the production side and as we take the top off the defense here. So I'm super excited to work with DJ. We're going to get that rolling here this coming week. So
get your 84 jerseys out.
84 jerseys.
Yeah. Randy Moss, baby. Off the defense.
I'm going to have the attach the gloves to the face mask. And here we go.
I wanted to talk a bit of President's Cup standings quickly. Have you looked at this? So right now, the top 10, DJ, Spieth, JT, Berger, Fowler, Koepka, Kisner, Charlie Hoffman, Matt Kuchar, Kevin Chappell. So let's just assume those 10 are the 10 that are going to make it automatically. And I know it's probably hard with a list not right in front of you to think of two guys. I think the two captain's picks might be very easy after that. Patrick Reed sitting at 11th and then Phil's at 17th. Those have to be the two captain's picks, right?
I think so. I mean, especially it's the tour doing it, and they want to, bring up stars.
The other guys there are like Harmon, Duffner, Sned, Steele.
Four captains' picks for the world and two for the U.S.
I just assumed that it was two.
I think it was four each.
Oh, it's been two in the past. I just assumed it was the same. I could be wrong though.
Okay.
Two captain selections will be made September 6, 2017. So essentially a month from now. So a lot could change between now and then.
This could be the year that the U.S. team wins it's like a 2006 Ryder Cup. In reverse.
The 21st podcast where the 2006 Ryder Cup has at least been mentioned. So... all right, let's do some questions. And sorry, I wanted to get to more of these. So Will Bardwell sent in the question about your response to Sarson's golf Twitter post. Sorry, I didn't give a shout out to that. Mike Hennessy had a great one. What do you think of Hideki Matsuyama, and can he win this week?
Are you going to the press conferences at all?
Probably.
You have to go to the press conference. You have to go to Spieth's press conference. And like a couple guys' press conferences, and basically steal that Japanese reporter's question. <Yes. quest.
laughs> I should do that. I will do that. If I go to a press conference, I will do that.
Okay.
Let's see. If Curry had been in, this is Ryan Mass. If Curry had been at Firestone this week, how many strokes would he have beaten Willett by?
I think Willett probably would have WD'd it, right?
Probably. I think so.
Trick question.
Brian Evanson says, why can't the PGA get their media partners to offer morning network coverage a la the U.S. Open and Open? Is there not going to be any morning coverage?
If I remember correctly, TNT was pretty early last year.
I thought so, too. I thought they always did feature group stuff and whatnot. So we need that group to take over the Sunday afternoon, evening coverage that we fall asleep to that CBS does. But that's enough on that.
TNT's they go 1-7 so I guess
be anything for Thursday and Friday morning though.
I think they're doing some streaming stuff early.
They have in the past. They did it feel like they did it online back at like Atlanta Athletic Club in like 2011 that was. So I feel like that they have to be involved in that. These are things we should know. But What are your thoughts on quail on the course? Oh, here's a good one. What is your favorite now defunct golf brand from the 90s / early 2000s? That's from Kevin Ego.
Maybe Yonex. I don't know if they still make stuff, but I just because Lefty rocking those Blade Yonexes, which, I mean, those very well could have just been Miuras with a Yonex stamp on them, but those, I was a big fan. I know they're still kind of making clubs, but I was a huge fan of those Ben Hogan Apex Pros. Those were sweet. Somebody mentioned McGregor. McGregor was great, except for they had Aaron Baddeley as their kind of, it was like Aaron Baddeley and Jose Maria Olazabal as their two main guys. I don't know. What do you think?
No love for the Pure Spin Diamond Face Scoring Wedge. Ooh. God, those infomercials. So the kid in me, like, I was fascinated by backspin as a kid. All I wanted to do was be able to backspin the ball. And we would save up money to, like, think about actually buying the Pure Spin Diamond Face Scoring Wedge from the infomercials. But the actual reviews from people were not very, like, it wears down really fast and it just scuffs your ball.
Was that USGA conforming?
Probably not. But that was in the square groove era. Like, I don't even think you really needed the Diamond Face. I'm surprised people don't talk more about the square grooves and the change in era that went with that.
Somebody said Snake Eyes wedges. I can get down with that. Snake Eyes made some good, like, I had a Snake Eyes, what they called a 10 iron pitching wedge, but man, that thing you could spin the heck out of that. Probably giving away like 10 yards on it, but.
My boy Patrick Bell says, if caddies were not permitted, who would be the top 5 golfers in the world? Basically, who has the worst caddy, basically, right?
Or who has the best level of fitness.
Yeah, that's true. Are push carts allowed? That's...
Yeah, that's the big question.
That changes everything.
Or I think a better question would be, who would be the like top players who would suffer the most?
Yeah, with right? Not having the caddy.
We could probably do a podcast on, or like a piece just on this. So we may have to keep that holstered.
I think it would hurt Spieth a lot. I think he and Grell are really, and as much as people make fun of like the Wii thing, I think it actually does matter to him a lot.
Greller's an alpha. Needs that alpha on the back.
All right. I'm up against it. So I've got a jet here. Is there anything else major that we missed this week?
Shout out to the dude who won on the McKenzie Tour.
Do you know his name?
Yeah, I know his I know his Twitter handle.
How are you giving a shout out if you
3Wiggle99, I think, is his Twitter handle. He's the first guy to win on the Narcos Tour and the McKenzie Tour. And he was wearing like a Srixon bucket hat, a like pleated short or pleated pants, like a polo RLX shirt, a black glove. It was insane. It was like the best combination of outrageous attire I think I've ever seen. And then just another announcement. We got a trap draw recording tonight.
Trap draws like in the same month, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. So this is going to be a regular occurrence courtesy of, we got a producer now. We know how to record now with DJ. So special guest on tonight.
3 years we've been doing podcasts and you just said we know how to record now.
No, Randy and I. You know how to record. Randy and I.
Unbelievable.
But yeah, I will just say he's a slender man, the guest tonight, and he's a recent victim of crime. Those are the two hints we'll give.
All right, and yeah, people have been asking about podcast frequency and whatnot. Yes, now that I'm full time and actually back in the States, this is the first one of the full time schedule. These are going to be much more frequent. I think that is the plan, at least. And it's been tough to get players on during the middle of major season, but we got some good ones lined up for after PGA and whatnot.
Last thing for PGA, Charles Howell III, 200-1.
Not fair. Yeah, that's
I'm looking at right now.
That's a wild one.
Hopefully another one coming tomorrow. It's not finalized yet, but trying to track down one particular analyst that I think would be fascinating to talk about competing in majors with. So working on that. He is a menace. Quick shout out also to my boy Frank Tedesco. We played in the Brookside Golf and Country Club Invitational this week, and that was in Columbus, Ohio, and he played his ass off and shot two career rounds to get us into the championship, and I took us home yesterday for first flight champs. I've never played in one of those, and we won. So
you were catching some flack on the gram though for being in first flight.
What is that? I don't understand that. Like, we weren't in the championship flight, and we were in the next flight. What's wrong with that?
I don't know. I mean, you're essentially a scratch at this point.
No, I'm a two. I'm a two, and Frank's a seven. Like, what?
You've played what, 45 rounds in the last 45 days?
Something like that. But it doesn't mean I'm playing well. Like, the ball still doesn't go in the hole. Like, I've been hitting a lot of shots, but I don't know. My game's in a pretty good place, but I haven't been like, I've only broken par like once or maybe twice. He's a seven.
Okay.
So. We had no business being in the championship flight, because this course is where they play the U.S. Open qualifier every year, and like it's 7,400 yards from the tips, and oh, there's so many good players at this club, and so yeah, we were quite fine in the first flight. So, but yeah, people are gonna hate on anything, no matter what. So I'm not, including you. You said you got some hate on the gram. That was you that hated on it.
No, it was me jumping in because somebody else hated on it.
Yeah, you were just waiting for somebody else to do it. So, all right, Tron, I will see you later this week, and we will have some wolf hammers going. And yeah, thanks for the time, buddy.
Yeah, dude.
Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Yeah! Johnny, that's better than most. How about him? That is better than most. Better than most!